Chapter 133. He fell away into a weakness so extreme that he could not raise his hand. But he still protected his brother according to his long usage, and would say with some complacency, 50 times a day, when he saw him standing by his bed, "My good Frederick, sit down. You are very feeble indeed." Apostrophe, they tried him with Mrs. General, but he had not the faintest knowledge of her. Some injurious suspicion lodged itself in his brain, that she wanted to supplant Mrs. Bangham, and that she was given to drinking. He charged her with it in no measured terms, and was so urgent with his daughter, to go round to the marshal, and entreat him to turn her out, that she was never reproduced after the first failure. Saving that he once asked, if Tip had gone outside? Apostrophe apostrophe the remembrance of his two children not present seemed to have departed from him. But the child who had done so much for him, and had been so poorly repaid, was never out of his mind. Not that he spared her, or was fearful of her being spent by watching and fatigue. He was not more troubled on that score than he had usually been. No, he loved her in his old way. They were in the jail again, and she tended him, and he had constant need of her, and could not turn without her, and he even told her, sometimes, that he was content to have undergone a great deal for her sake. As to her, she bent over his bed with her quiet face against his, and would have laid down her own life to restore him. When he had been sinking in this painless way for 2 or 3 days, she observed him to be troubled by the ticking of his watch, a pompous gold watch that made as great a to-do about its going, as if nothing else went but itself and time. She suffered it to run down, but he was still uneasy, and showed that was not what he wanted. At length he roused himself to explain that he wanted money to be raised on this watch. He was quite pleased when she pretended to take it away for the purpose, and afterwards had a relish for his little tastes of wine and jelly that he had not had before. He soon made it plain that this was so, for in another day or two he sent off his sleeve buttons and finger rings. He had an amazing satisfaction in entrusting her with these errands, and appeared to consider it equivalent to making the most methodical and provident arrangements. After his trinkets, or such of them as he had been able to see about him, were gone, his clothes engaged his attention, and it is as likely as not that he was kept alive for some days by the satisfaction of sending them, piece by piece, to an imaginary pawnbroker's. Thus for 10 days little Dorrit bent over his pillow, laying her cheek against his. Sometimes she was so worn out that for a few minutes they would slumber together. Then she would awake, to recollect with fast-flowing silent tears, what it was that touched her face, and to see, stealing over the cherished face upon the pillow, a deeper shadow than the shadow of the Marshalsea wall. Quietly, quietly, all the lines of the plan of the great castle melted one after another. Quietly, quietly, the ruled and cross-ruled countenance on which they were traced became fair and blank. Quietly, quietly, the reflected marks of the prison bars and of the zigzag iron on the wall top faded away. Quietly, quietly, the face subsided into a far younger likeness of her own than she had ever seen under the gray hair, and sank to rest. At first her uncle was stark distracted. "Oh, my brother! Oh, William, William! You to go before me, you to go alone, you to go, and I to remain. You, so far superior, so distinguished, so noble, I, a poor useless creature fit for nothing, and whom no one would have missed." Apostrophe apostrophe, it did her, for the time, the good of having him to think of and to succor. "Uncle, dear uncle, spare yourself, spare me." Apostrophe apostrophe, the old man was not deaf to the last words. When he did begin to restrain himself, it was that he might spare her. He had no care for himself. But, with all the remaining power of the honest heart, stunned so long, and now awaking to be broken, he honored and blessed her. "Oh God!" apostrophe he cried, before they left the room, with his wrinkled hands clasped over her. "Thou seest this daughter of my dear dead brother. all that I have looked upon, with my half-blind and sinful eyes, thou hast discerned clearly, brightly. Not a hair of her head shall be harmed before thee. Thou wilt uphold her here to her last hour, and I know thou wilt reward her hereafter. Apostrophe. They remained in a dim room near, until it was almost midnight, quiet and sad together. At times his grief would seek relief in a burst like that in which it had found its earliest expression. But, besides that his little strength would soon have been unequal to such strains, he never failed to recall her words, and to reproach himself and calm himself. The only utterance with which he indulged his sorrow, was the frequent exclamation, that his brother was gone, alone, that they had been together in the outset of their lives, that they had fallen into misfortune together, that they had kept together through their many years of poverty, that they had remained together to that day, and that his brother was gone alone, alone. They parted, heavy and sorrowful. She would not consent to leave him anywhere but in his own room, and she saw him lie down in his clothes upon his bed, and covered him with her own hands. Then she sank upon her own bed, and fell into a deep sleep. The sleep of exhaustion and rest, though not of complete release from a pervading consciousness of affliction. Sleep, good little Dorrit. Sleep through the night. It was a moonlight night, but the moon rose late, being long past the full. When it was high in the peaceful firmament, it shone through half-closed lattice blinds into the solemn room, where the stumblings and wanderings of a life had so lately ended. Two quiet figures were within the room, two figures, equally still and impassive, equally removed by an untraversable distance from the teeming earth and all that it contains, though soon to lie in it. One figure reposed upon the bed. The other, kneeling on the floor, drooped over it, the arms easily and peacefully resting on the coverlet, the face bowed down, so that the lips touched the hand over which with its last breath it had bent. The two brothers were before their father, far beyond the twilight judgment of this world, high above its mists and obscurities. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.